But use that as the same, you know, the answer to measure where we want to go and how to write. It's this is what that is. Much of what you raise is this self-regulation, which you put it for yourself, but this is how we're going to point ourselves. And we don't want to dispute that part, but given that we have to do this for ourselves. But does it work if we have to time and time come back and deal with the problems of this nature, but which in fact, obvious, right? That is why we have to go through all of this then, you know, process of trying to address, you know, the damage that was done by, you know, exposing a children at that level, you know. But again, what guides this new phenomenon called children? What is it that, I understand what the mainstream of the newspapers that will be covered by those code of conduct. But to me, again, it's clear that you operate in a different terrain compared. You cover different areas compared to what the normal newspapers that we have covered. And your direct, in fact, market is to the poorest of the poor can afford to pay the people to run, but it's a huge, in fact, damage that we make. Therefore, we have to strike a particular balance. Some understanding before we arrive at that. Because this new, what you call the tabloid, which is something that you that invites you sort of brought in from somewhere else in the world. And the current parties are not sure that they, in those areas, have they gone through these problems and how they've managed to overcome them. When I was in the UK now recently, I saw some of what you call tabloids. Some of them, they fill them. They fill the paper so that children young as 18 or 17 or what will not read the paper. Strictly that this paper is for adults. Whatever you may call someone who is not called pornographic entertainment. And they call it adult entertainment or adult viewing for whatever reason. Then ourselves as a young democracy, as young as the daily voice of us, how do we at the same time try give information to the public, which is accurate, which is public trust, and again to deal with issues that we still want to introduce to the public? Because what I see, we want to introduce this new phenomenon called tabloid newspapers that covers nudity. You see, total nudity that we see. Within the African content, again, how do you bring that in? You know, my question earlier when I was asking my sister to go around the issue of the behavior of other media around issues of pornography in the country, within the continent. Obviously, the answer was that we don't have much. In fact, we don't have it because, I mean, you know that within Saturday, for example, not a single newspaper that they produce or print a pornographic day was for the head. So we South Africa. And we always say we want to be the example for the good democracy here. At the same time, in fact, very negative on what we're trying to address with this big challenge. And what is going to be a take, in fact, what is it that, the question that Hoffman asked, what is it that you want to suggest that rather than going this route of this thing, and don't touch issues of freedom of press, therefore we suggest that rather than putting these issues, this is what it is to have parliament, where the responsibility? Our responsibility is to make sure that we protect those vulnerable. You know, not only the children, but the general society. We have a very, very abnormal situation. I've been 10 years down the line of our democracy. You know, very, very abnormal situation that you see a person having to have sex with a dog, a father having to raise a child. You know, it's something that is really unacceptable. We have a responsibility, all of us, to make sure that this thing does not happen. At the same time, we're looking at how best we can make profit. We must make money, we must sell, we must earn a living. You know, now, that balance, I think, is what we must sort of engage on around. Based on our presentation, in fact, but the manner in which you present is accurate. What you're putting, I mean, totally will support you when it comes to issues of freedom of the press. But the challenges that are facing us, how then do we address them? You know? And again, it's something that, you know, it's happening with these tabloid newspapers that are mushrooming all over. It's a fact without anything, just like so-and-so, what, you know. Where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line to help the society to grow, to develop, and to protect this young democracy that we have? Which Film and Publication Board doesn't put a filter there. How do we do that? At what point do we arrive at saying this is really enough, we cannot do it? Therefore, do it might or what? Because we'll legislate, right? We'll legislate, we'll fight, we'll go to the court. The court at some point will come to understand that in fact what Parliament is trying to address, the issue of morass regeneration, why we have nothing as government, not just come to it, but we saw that we are sliding backward. We're sliding backward more than, I mean, during apartheid days, some of us received the school, I'll tell you that even a copy of a pornograph, you know it. It will be something of top secret. Top secret, that will not even see it. It will be the few that will see it, you know, the few who are associated maybe with me, who managed to get it from somewhere. But it was top secret, it never sees anywhere. Today, magazines, your Hustler, your what? Hustler, I always read that thing. Hustler has two versions of the magazines. It has the magazine for the rest of the world, which is very light pornography. It has a magazine for South Africa. Hardcore pornography. Specifically designed, written there for South Africa, and the rest for the rest of the world. Now, why would South Africa then be the one that must receive this hardcore pornography, and the rest of the world receive what you call mild pornography and all of that? You know? Now, and with these challenges that obviously are facing of making sure that the freedom of the press is not infringed, everybody is protected and all of that, how do we sort of deal with these issues? With the understanding obviously of this huge organization that you represent, and I believe that in your boardrooms as you engage, as you look at the development of press on a daily basis, you come across these issues. That the society finds itself in a particular situation, and we have a press that is very influential. And our task is not to curtail and cut it down. Our task is to make sure that we are able, in fact, to address this thing as we develop. It's very exciting. It's very exciting what you see, the WWE, the TV, all of these wonderful things that sometimes you see. Some of them are very violent, what's called. You know, and you start to see that violence translating itself massive within the society in general, you know. And we come from a very horrible background, all of us, you know. The past where violence was the norm of the day. Therefore, let's arrive at understanding. Your understanding will help us, in fact, as we legislate that, you know, the role players, in fact, very influential people, not only looking at profit, but looking at building the society. This is their future on these issues. So, yeah, I thought we should sort of, based on your presentation, sort of open up and engage in those areas. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My colleague will respond to the issues that you've raised.
Thank you, Chair. Before we break for lunch, Chair, you made a very interesting comment. You said you never want to be compared to the old South Africa, to the apartheid era. I think from our side, we never want to be compared to child pornographers or child abusers. We want to start with on that basis. You raised several issues, and maybe I'll try and address some of those issues. I think in terms of our minds, Chair, I think the whole question of capitalization is a new phenomenon in this country. I think it will go through a period of development, much as it has done in the UK. The UK tabloids, I would argue, if you went back 20 or 30 years, were as wild as our ones are right now, but they've come into an era of their own where I think they are respectable newspapers. I think, you know, my concern about where we're going with this debate is what we shouldn't be trying to do is throw the baby out of the bathwater. I think we can find middle ground that works for all of us. Little known phenomenon about our tabloid newspapers is between Daily Sun, Daily Voice, and Cape Sun, two of which are owned by our colleagues across the way here. We've added probably a total of between 6 and 8 million new readers to the market. People have been marginalized by newspapers in the past. They're now reading newspapers. I think the key issue facing us now, and the reason we as independents have gone for a code of conduct that governs Daily Voice specifically, that's tougher, is the need for us to say that we're now dealing with a new audience. How do we actually make sure that we don't break the law? So how do we make sure that our ethics are intact? How do we make sure that in terms of the target market that we're working with, that we actually understand the prevailing mood of that market and that we reflect the interest of that target market. And I think we're going to make mistakes along the way, and I think we accept that. I think in terms of where we are right now is a question of saying to ourselves, how do we regularize all of those kinds of things, and therefore the code of conduct is quite important. The second issue that we've addressed at Independent, and I'll talk to Independent right now, and I think it would be the same at Media 24, I wouldn't think that they would be in a different position. The second issue for us is, if the tabloids, by their very nature, push the envelope, we must make very sure, I need to say another word, we must make very sure that on our side, the people running our tabloids are better skilled than any other journalist. They actually understand what they're dealing with. They understand the impact of what they're doing out there. So training is a big impact. That's a big requirement in terms of saying, understand the activities that you're going to be engaging with. In terms of children, I think the children issue is the one that's probably freshest in our minds. We at Daily Voice now, we've put in place a code of conduct around the treatment of children in the publication and the treatment of children that come in contact with the paper. And that we've developed together with some of the colleagues and some of the other organizations. The fundamental concern, Chair, is that we would want to argue that the beefed up self-regulations with the print council, or press council, is going to be one good way of doing it, where we can actually measure on an ongoing basis. And of course, the press council is not the only remedy. If we transgress and people don't believe in the press council is the way to deal with it, there are several other remedies that exist for people out there. And we have to abide by that because we are good corporate citizens. We believe in the statutes of this country, and if we do wrong, I think we want to be charged and we want action taken against us on those issues. Chair, the question of profits, I want to say to you categorically, and I would say that my colleagues around here would have the same view. It's never going to be profits over everything else. That's not the position we adopt. Yes, we are wanting to make profits, but we're not going to survey porn, we're not going to abuse children, we're not going to go against the law of the land. In the interest of making profits, that's not what we're about. We really approach this as good corporate citizens. Could you help us answer all this? Right.
Chair, I mean, just to add, I can see that there's a bit of skepticism around the suggestion that we put on the table, which is not a new position, something that has always been happening as far as this is concerned. For us, we think that the biggest solution to what the problems that we're discussing here is self-regulation. And we are hoping that the honorable members will realize that as an industry, we have an obligation to ourselves, to the public. We survive on the integrity that we have. We survive on the trust that the public has on a daily basis. And we value that. And we don't want to see that eroded. Honorable Chair, I want to assure you that the issues that you're raising right now, the concerns that you have around tabloidism, are the concerns that we have as an industry. And like my colleague has said, tabloids are a phenomenon that's 2-3 years old in this country, 4 years old. We also battling with coming to terms with dealing with the challenges that brought to the industry. But let me assure you that we take self-regulation very seriously. And we did so before this bill came to the fore. And we put in measures in effect to make sure that self-regulation works. And we want to give you our word that we will make that self-regulation work. It's not in our interest to be having fingers pointed at us because things that we said are going to work don't work at the end of the day. It's up to us, it's our integrity that is on the line, and we have to work hard to ensure that self-regulation works. And like I've said, we put measures in place, we're putting in a bit of money in to ensure that self-regulation works. I also just wanted to point out, Honorable Chair, that the magazine were never exempt. As compared to the newspapers, and we are not asking for that kind of exemption. It's about the news media exemption that we're seeking here. But I think at the end of the day, we want the courts, the press courts, to work, and we will ensure that they work. And I think the example of the board, as has been shown by what internal processes can do, is a clear indication of the measures that we are prepared to take as an organization, as an industry body, and as individual operators to ensure that our code of ethics are strong, that the people that work with do understand the importance of ensuring that the product that we get out into the market is a product that is fit for public consumption.
Sorry, yeah, I will. Sorry, Chairperson, I wasn't really going to comment. I was just moving some bottles around. But since you want me to comment, and my learned president there has already summarized it, I just wanted to say that, importantly, and I hear that the industry has improved over time. And I'm very proud of the fact that it's done this. And the oldest newspapers in South Africa, Chair, are over 160 years of age. The Cape Argus, which is one of ours, is 150, and there's a couple above that, and there's many below that. When you take into consideration the age of those newspapers and that the industry has effectively looked after itself over all those years, it's very proud of that fact. And it's proud that it has been able to regulate itself. And it now sits with a new group of publications down at the bottom, looking at 160 odd years at the top and four years at the bottom, that comes at the market with a different approach. And I think, as my colleague says, a different type of editorial, a different approach to editorial. So our challenge then, and we've started that process certainly inside our company, and I know that Media 24, who look after the other tabloids, have done exactly the same thing. Our challenge is to, as an industry now, is to urgently understand this new type of newspaper, which we are doing. We need to understand its constituency of readers, which, as you've heard, is probably upwards somewhere between 6 and 8 million people read those newspapers on a daily basis. And then to speedily, once we understand these things, to speedily bring it under the type of self-internal regulation and control that all our other newspapers have been able to grow under over all those many, many years. And that's our responsibility, Chair, and I think the President has suggested that that is where we should be sent away and to be challenged by this touch committee to in fact go and do that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So, Honourable Chair, perhaps before the members come in, one of my colleagues wants to say something.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Swanson, the CEO of Media 24 Newspapers and the Digital Division. Perhaps just to supplement what my colleagues. Thank you, Chair. My name is Swanson, the Chief Executive of Media 24 Newspapers and Digital Division. I'd like to supplement what my colleague has referred to. The first is, first of all, that in-house, apart from normally the industry bodies that we have that regulate, we have our own, first of all, ombudsman system within our group, and secondly, all our newspapers, including our tabloids, which you may be familiar with, which is Sun and Daily Sun, they have their internal code of conduct to which they subscribe, and which is on par with the code of conduct of our broadsheets. And I think we, as an organization, I think, pride ourselves in our production values, and hence, certainly try and enforce and get our people to adhere to those code of conduct. Just on the issue of profit motive, I've always been a firm believer that it's about sustainable profitability. You can't manage a business on a sustainable basis if you either treat your readers or the public with disrespect and you don't adhere to certain values. And hence, I think as an organization, we certainly wouldn't be prepared to compromise on our value system in the interest of short-term profits. And I think I speak on behalf of our industry and my colleagues when I make that statement. Just perhaps one other thing that I would like to highlight to this committee is that currently the internet is not being regulated to the same extent as being envisaged in this new legislation. And the problem is, of course, of the internet, first of all, being pervasive, but also, in a way, boundaryless medium. It does create certain inequalities if this type of legislation is passed, because the internet as a means, as a news medium, certainly will increasingly be competing with other traditional media forms. That is just something that one also needs to bear in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Chetan. Let me start with the question of Amphus Man, because all the documents from yourself. I want assurance from yourself whether you are also gender sensitive at the same time when you are complaining about a human publication. Because your documents keep on saying Ombudsman, Ombudsman all the time. Are you going to correct it from here when you go back? My second question, Chairperson. In terms of his presentation, he's saying Clause 20 removes the right of appeal to the High Court. Chairperson, if you can read Section 21 of the main act, the principal act, Chairperson, where they said the minister or any person who has lodged a complaint with the board that any publication be referred to a classification committee for a decision. You can understand it, Chairperson, how the department decided to remove Section 21. Because the minister cannot appeal to his board, because the board is there to advise the minister. That's why the department decided to remove this Section 21. And again, in terms of normal court procedure, any person after you have exhausted all the revenues, the avenues, you can go to Supreme Court. No one will say, don't come here. But if you just go there without finishing all the normal procedures, the Supreme Court is going to turn you away. Lastly, Chairperson, let me go to... I want also from the department to clarify, because in terms of the B, so when they talk about classification, Chairperson, there are certain issues which they are saying if this thing is falling under this category. Before you publish it, you must request from the board. They mentioned issues like child pornography, which the presenter also supported that this is not correct. I just want to find out if he also supported that this is not correct, but why, when they classify issues under pornography, saying it's not correct, can they clarify us which route must the department take in order to certify the presenter, Chairperson? Thank you.
I'm basically understanding the question, but I think to answer the question, if I do understand it, we can't offer suggestions to how classification can be done, because we don't believe that classification is a solution. We believe in self-regulation. We're not going to suggest how our lives are going to be made difficult, so I can't get into that. But our lawyer colleagues will respond to the question.
The members of the committee, I think our difficulty with the removal of the right to appeal is, and the case of High Court, is that it's in violation of the constitutional right to access to the court. Although there is a review procedure, it's built into the organizational body itself. It doesn't allow for an independent right to have a decision determined by by the judiciary itself. And that, we believe, is also problematic if one has regard to requirements for fair administrative justice as set out in the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act, which gives effect to the right to fair administrative justice in the Constitution, as well as the right to access to the courts. Thank you.
I think you could just say a bit further, because my understanding is you would have that right. If you were aggrieved by the decision, if you hadn't said a justice decision, and one would be able to go to the Supreme Court in terms of the promotion of administrative justice. So I don't know whether that is such a career. You know, I think you would still have the inherent right to go in terms of the provisions of the administrative justice act. But clearly we can look into that issue.
I think what is written in the legislation is the right of appeal, which is slightly different to what we would maybe if there is no that right, there is a residual right to see a right to review. And appeal is a review is only limited. You would have to obviously base it on error and reasoning and a bad decision, whether the appeal would allow you to look at wider issues.
Dr. Shea, you want to come in here with us now. Let's know that for you. And then I will deal with it when we do this comparison. For the whole of this thing, because it doesn't matter. But there was a question that was asked. Most of us want to respond to the benefit of everybody on their question. That is a question of the question.
I'm going to clarify, is it a question about capacity? Yes, thank you, Chair. I mean, obviously, the legislation that we're proposing has implication in all respects, including financial resources, human resources, and all other resources. So it is going to have an impact on the capacity in a current form. And we take it for granted that we will be following the normal process where we will be talking to treasurers, we showing them what the difference is, like, you know, the benefit analysis and what kind of resources we require, as every other state entity and department would be entitled to. And they would obviously have to determine what resources they think we deserve to have based on our request. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, obviously a concern for us when we pass the legislation is that soils must be properly constructed. Now, I note in your memorandum that the financial implications of the soil are not being constructed. And that is an issue that we obviously are going to tie to what was
said now. Let's not create that engagement now. Let's not be disappointed that we'll deal with it when we deliberate ourselves. Because we're still going to engage on the people. People must understand that. We listen to you, we're going to engage them. More robust than what's happening now. That's our parliament way. It looks very nice. For some of us, we enjoy. And I enjoy my way. I like to come to parliament. And I know that I'm left with 2 years to go. So before I end my term, I want to make sure that I'm really working for the public. I think like in good, isn't
it? Thank you, Chairperson. And also I would like the department to clarify us in terms of consultation so that we cannot fall under the category of the ministry where they said the consultation was not properly done. Could they clarify us? In terms of proper parliamentary procedure.
There are only two organizations, you know, a Senate and the what's called, they've raised a very serious concern that other bodies have consulted at their level. And I know that they've been engaging either informal or there's no record of their engagement. We have asked, that we have minutes of those meetings. Here it was informal, coffee, eggnog, cakes, and bananas, and all of that. And people then bring this consultation. We want to see a consultation where people make a meaningful contribution in the lawmaking process. from the draft form and all of that. Why this one deliberately were not taken into account? So it's not in the list. Or they decided to send a deadline and say, after government gathered together, and they'll get it then. Yeah, that's just here. It was quite very interesting in that day.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I think it's only fair and honest to say that it was genuinely there was no theory to disregard the process. It was simply an oversight on our part at the time because of the rush, because of the deadline that we had. But I think it was also because it is not people that we used to regulate before, and we did not have them in our system. It was simply an oversight on our part, and it is precisely why. We agreed that they would do their submission despite the fact that we had set the deadline already. We subsequently went on to have meetings with them as well, because we did realize that on our part we had done a serious oversight. Thank you, Chair.
My word.
Thank
you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. One of the procedures that we follow in government departments when we do our legislation is you publish something in the government gazette. Once it's published in the government gazette for public comment, we accept that it comes to the attention of the public at large. I don't think it can be expected of government departments to go to each and every individual and tell them, listen, this is on the list. In some instances, you do have lists, as was indicated by the CEO of the Films and Publication Board, that we did see. And I indicated in that list that we sent to the people and we received certain comments, etc. And also on when you do consultations, it's not on a one-on-one basis. We receive the comments, we look at the comments and you draft the legislation, etc. Because there is another process that's involved like we have now, where people can come and make public input there as well. Thanks, Chief.
That's fine. Thank you. That's why I wanted just to confirm the this process, that everybody agrees with the process that we must have. But again, just to clarify this plan consultation, but again, same applies for the committee section where Bakai, some of them we invited them, this time we invited Tamil and Madam Producing. At the same time, advertising, but just to extend, you know, the invitation so that they're part of the process, because we know they're in the stakeholders. Therefore, I think it's confirmed. We may not want to go back to that process.
I think, Mr. Honourable Chair, we just want to place it in record the fact that there has been an admission on their side that they consulted 36 people. We don't know how those 36 people got to be consulted. But no effort was made to get across to us. But more than that, Honourable Chair, we made an effort. We made an effort when we knew that this deal was cooking. To make the time make contact with the government, and we got no joy, which is why we're making so much noise. We would be making so much noise about land consultation if we didn't consult.
That noise is finished today. We will not have another noise. What we're going to communicate to the public now is that, yes, we have now set up a particular process for engaging with Parliament, and then we have put these things across Parliament. All our concerns are before Parliament. Now it's up to Parliament to deal with those issues. Because I don't want us to go back to that point again, but it was necessary for us to clarify this whole thing of consultation. Because in the reading of that list, normally you will find that high sometimes at the back of the list, that these are the bodies that you have consulted. You know? So clearly that even here, it only says that only stakeholders, number of stakeholders, it does not specify which bodies were consulted. Therefore, it's an oversight, the fact that there is our responsibility again to engage. What we are engaging for us. Because you cannot sit back and say, because you're not consulted and we'll cry. We'll let you change, and then we'll be crying up and let you change, and 10 million will go to the Constitutional Court and still do the cases. So it's better to engage with us at this level. It's a very important level for a policy making. You know, because you are the ones who can go right about our salaries. You know, that members of Parliament are crying that are not being paid, and the commission says, no, they must stop shipping their dollars, they must go to work. We're waiting now yet. We must go back and write that members must be paid then. Yes, so because we paid better, we're doing it of work. You know, when you fly London, the director sits on the business class, member of Parliament sits on the economic class. You know that.
All right. I think we have sort of engaged with you. What I'm going to ask you to do is that, and those you have presented, will the lady give us copies of your code of conduct for the benefit of the committee, just to have an understanding the manner in which you structure yourself is over, you know, what's called self-regulation. So that we can then look at what is it that you're doing, to look at yourself, you know. Not wanting to interfere and telling you how you must put it, you know, but just for us to understand. So that the time we take a decision, we must be definitely sure that what we're trying to address is something that these organizations themselves will be able to do that for themselves. That's the role of the committee, in fact, that's the role.
Mr. Chair, we did attach the press of both of policies code of conduct without submission. But we will, I think, have the consultation with my members, submit in house code of conduct and in house on this code.
Part of what you challenge organizations, what guides them to develop the code of conduct, I think is very important again. You know, because I would understand that with the number of critical issues that I was raising here, I think those are things that help us to arrive at a particular code of conduct. So, those we have presented already, we will listen to the rest, but I think the apology of the universities that said earlier is accepted again. We'll keep on watching you. But I think that will be him raised, we get to simplify them as well. And improve on what it is the public. You know, because our public is different from the UK. Our public is different from what we find in the UK. You know, we have a particular, you know, a constituency, a public in South Africa, which very, very proud people, you know. And certain things that one copy from the UK may not fit into our system here, but it's not for us to say no. We're sort of beginning again to put some kind of a censorship against you. But on issues that we don't like, we'll definitely deal with those issues. If the issue of child abuse was, we'll have to deal with it, we'll put a lot of deal with those things. And together with you, we'll sort of deal with those issues. So thank you very much, and it was wonderful to engage with you. Alright, the next presenter will be. Because the publishers have done the federal, or the federal, Now we come into the Southern African Federation against copyright infringement. That's the one.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to your committee. My name is James Lennox. I'm the CEO of the SAFACT, as we call it, Southern African Federation Against Copyright Theft. We're a Section 21 company, industry funded by companies in the film and interactive games industries, both in South Africa, Southern Africa, and internationally. Our mission is to create an anti-counterfeiting and piracy culture and a respect for intellectual property rights. We are assisted in our efforts to enforce intellectual property rights by a number of state agencies, including the South African Police Service, Revenue Services, Customs, Department of Trade and Industry, as well as the National Prosecuting Authority. Our local members consist of, amongst others, from the film and game side, MNET MultiChoice, Next Video, New Metro, Sir Kinecore, Video Vision, Sotsi Films, and UIP. Our international members, I think you're all aware of the seven deadly sisters, as some people call them, the major American studios, as well as some of the other independents. Our primary comments around this proposed legislation are concentrated on sections 15, 18, and 30. But I think it's important that we give you the overview and the context in which we're putting those submissions. And I think it's important to stress that as the film and interactive games copyright industries actually support a consistent application of a system of classification of films and games to enable informed choices by consumers and parents. We also understand that we need a classification system that reflects the morals to which our society aspires. and that the efforts to stop the abuse and exploitation of children we support wholeheartedly, and it's particularly objectionable to SAMAC and its members. But a classification system must be supported, and enabling legislation that is consistent with the Constitution and other legislation which it may impinge, which we will refer to particularly under Section 30. And, amongst all this, the respect and protection of intellectual property rights. Within that context, I have to tell you, we have got a lot of experience of daily interaction with the Film and Publications Board in their efforts to apply this existing legislation. And we have to raise the issue, it has been raised already, whether or not the capacity to enforce legislation that they've already got is somewhat questionable, and whether or not the Treasury will allow, shall we say, the resources necessary to implement this legislation are somewhat worrying. And I think that is quite important, because we have two types of entities that the FPB deals with. Those are the ones that comply with the legislation, who are the ones that seem to be inspected, and account for 75 to 80% of the non-grant revenue of the Film and Publications Board, who happen also to be members of SAFAC. And in respect of Section 30, if we're going to have all these sort of legislative requirements, criminal requirements that are going to be enforced, then the capacity to implement the legislation is critical. The impact on the cost of compliance from existing members and existing, shall we say, clients of the Film and Publications Board as a result of the increased capacity necessary to enforce and implement the legislation is also a concern, because the people who actually comply with the legislation are the ones who are actually funding the enforcement against those who don't comply, and in effect have to cover that from their fees. We're also of the view that this whole thing about child protection and child pornography is actually critical, and it seems to be being addressed in a piecemeal way. And our view is that it needs to be looked at and better achieved through specific legislation with significant specialized resources for prevention, protection, enforcement, and prosecution. And we'll expand on that a little later. We're also quite strong in saying that the current legislation and the proposed amendments do not contribute to the battle against other crimes being committed in the sphere of film and interactive games, and in particular the protection of intellectual property rights against the scourge of piracy. This concern was noted actually on page 28 of the 2004-2005 annual report of the Films and Publications Board, but unfortunately has not been addressed in the proposed amendments. And whilst we appreciate that the FPB cannot engage in anti-piracy enforcement actions, it can contribute to the creation of a more equitable environment in which legitimate businesses operate by consistent enforcement in partnership with the law enforcement community of the legislative requirements of the Act, particularly in respect to street vendors, flea markets, and the internet, which actually receive very little enforcement action. But we're also committed, because we realise that this is a partnership, our members are committed to partnering and assisting the Film and Publications Board to achieve its objectives. So in that light, our submissions around Section 15, which are the functions and powers of compliance officers, which is a new insertion into this legislation, we have a problem with the fact that the people dealing, if I can talk on child pornography, the people who are trading or dealing in child pornography are not basically trading out of shops. They're closed groups, they're internet groups. They are working from home. Increasingly, the piracy that's being experienced by our industry is being conducted from people's homes. We are now, according to this legislation, affording a compliance officer, of which there is no, shall we say, explanation of his duties or his responsibilities in this proposed legislation, other than the fact he's got right of entry into any premise or premises conducting a business. Members of the South African Police Service do not have that, particularly with respect to private residents. If they do it without a warrant, they have to get condemnation from a magistrate after the fact. We are now saying that a compliance officer from the Film and Publications Board has got the right of entry, and that needs to be looked at, because what will happen is that it will be contested and the credibility of the legislation will be negatively impacted, and in effect you're going to spend all your time dealing with these sort of issues rather than the real issue at hand, which is consistent application of a classification process. So it is our view that the compliance officers and the FPB have to perform any of these functions where they want to enforce legislation under the same, shall we say, requirements as that of a police officer, and preferably, as it is at the present in the current legislation, through the police. And I think that's really our Section 15 issue. The classification of films, which is Section 18, we've spoken already about the annual report, and we were talking about interaction earlier. This issue that I'm raising has been known to the Film and Publications Board with its ongoing interaction with our industry for some years. And we have a lot of interaction with the board, and we actually try and support them, but sometimes we get very frustrated. The Section 18.1, where it says any person who intends to distribute or exhibit any film or interactive computer game in the Republic shall, in the prescribed manner with the prescribed fee, register with the board as a distributor, and also submit for examination and classification any film or interactive computer game that has not been classified. We have an issue with this thing about whether or not a film or interactive game has been or has not been classified. What is happening is that we tend to be basing our decisions on whether or not the title of a film has been classified. Now that presents all sorts of problems, because as you may or may not be aware, there can be a number of versions of the same title. And what is happening is that the pirates are downloading from the internet an early release, a pre-release, which is not the article that is presented by the authorized distributor to the Film and Publications Board, which receives classification for a fee. They are then piggybacking on that classification, which the content of that title for which they are now piggybacking may be completely different. There are increasingly unrated director's cuts, different versions for different territories. For instance, North Country, the Charlize Theron movie in the US, is particularly more violent than the one that was shown here. But if I bring in the US version, I can piggyback on the South African, more, shall we say, accommodating, less restrictive classification. So your objective of informing and choosing has just been defeated. We are of the opinion that there needs to be inclusion in this legislation, that whoever is going to distribute or exhibit a film or interactive game in this country needs to do several things. One, it has to prove through the submission of a tax clearance certificate that it's conducting its business properly. There is a vast number of pirate operators, unregistered and, shall we say, criminal elements operating in this industry, some of whom are sitting around the corner here in a retail shop that are distributors under the Film and Publications Act, but are certainly not tax compliant and are certainly not compliant with any other legislation in this country. We feel that they should submit proof and evidence of copyright registration or ownership. I have to tell you up front that this clause and the next clause that we're suggesting, which is in the case of foreign films, submit evidence of copyright authorization or distribution rights from the original owner. We did not go to the UK or Australia for this sort of input. This is from the Nigerian classification requirements. They have a similar problem with a vibrant, growing local film industry that is being annihilated by pirates and counterfeiters. The other thing, of course, is that you are bringing in extraterritorial application of this legislation. I may have created a movie overseas, and in your clause it says the creation not only the distribution, but creation of a movie. And I may have no intention whatsoever of that movie being distributed legally in this country. The legislation is now, in effect, if you look at it fairly literally, somebody brings it in without my permission. You are offended by it. You take legal action against that. And the next time I visit this country, possibly on holiday, there's a warrant for my arrest. Because somebody has brought in a film or a game that I had no intention in its format of releasing in this country. So I think it is important that we're going to have a fair classification system and we are going to inform the public and parents as to what is suitable. I've got to be confident that if that title has got a PG-13, my 10-year-old cannot watch it. When it comes in with a PG-10 because somebody has fraudulently used my possession, my creation, and piggyback on somebody else's, and it's actually a 16 violence, sex, nudity, and language, then what recourse have I got? You, in this act, can actually take me, the parent, to court, because I have allowed, if it's over 18, the content, if I have allowed somebody to view that. Not exhibit it, I've handed it to my son or my child. So there's lots of sort of cross sort of meanings in some of this legislation. And our view is that if you prove copyright for local films, and if you prove that for foreign films, you submit evidence of copyright authorization or distribution rights from the original owner, then you start regulating the classification process. And I have to stress that because it's... What we're basically saying if we don't do something like this is if you buy it from Pick and Pay, then you can respect and, in effect, take notice of the classification. If you see that classification somewhere else, from a flea market or whatever, you're actually sort of saying, well, you know, it's not legitimate. We have issues which were raised on Section 30, where people are printing and selling FPV stickers. There is no protection of the FPV sticker, classification sticker. So, any person in our view who imports for distribution or exhibition, whether that title has been classified before, needs to submit within the same requirements as, shall we say, the authorized distributor, has to prove he has got the owner's rights and permission to distribute and classify that movie, even if it's the same title. I think the display under Section 18A, that the display of classification decisions is somewhat troublesome. I'm sure the FPB will agree with us on that. We feel that whereas there is a legal requirement for the certificate of classification, they need to go a bit further. They need to make the FPB triangle and its classification a protected mark under the Trademarks Act, which in effect gives them broader powers to enforce, shall we say, the credibility of their process. And we would respectfully suggest that that is considered even at this later stage. I know it is contained within the regulations, but I'm sure the regulations will have to be amended to take account of these amendments, and it may be a good opportunity to declare that a prohibited mark. We have had for some time a problem with the intention of the board to implement the administration of, in effect, a fines system as envisaged or as contained in Section 30 of the Act. We are nervous about an opportunity of a person dealing in pirated and counterfeit product to normalize or regularize his conduct by, in effect, paying double whatever the classification fee is. And the reason we say that is that SAPAC is committed to the criminal prosecution of people dealing with pirated product of our members. We are not interested in fines. We're not interested in that cost or hassle of doing business. The state is committed to eradicate counterfeiting and piracy, and its legislation should reflect that consistently across all of its acts. And what we are presenting here is that if I am a pirate and I am caught by an FPB monitor or compliance officer, I can regularize my situation. Along comes the police under the Copyright or Counterfeit Goods Act, which are criminal offences as well. That pirate ends up in court, and as you know better than I, in criminal law, it's beyond reasonable doubt that you have to prove knowledge. By normalizing, regulating, or legitimizing that product, you've created doubt as to whether or not it is pirated. We've had it. We've had people saying, well, you know, this department of government said it was okay. Now, this private industry body is saying it's not okay. And we're creating doubt, and yet we have noticed consistently for the last couple of years that the state is putting the resources into the battle against piracy. So it's important that we don't have loopholes emerging for very unintended consequences through legislation such as the Film and Publications Act. In our view, it would also strengthen the enforcement of the Films and Publications Act in relation to classifications of films and interactive games. And we would truly have a credible informing procedure. I keep going back to this inform and choose because that is what the Film and Publications Board is promoting with regard to films and interactive games. The child pornography, of course, we go back to the compliance thing. Child pornography is by and large conducted over the internet through closed groups and increasingly through the swapping of hard drives of computers. We see nothing in this legislation. It's almost the legislation is almost worded where everything is included and then it's and the internet. It's almost an afterthought. The internet creates huge challenges for legitimate businesses. We don't want to cramp the development of any of this wonderful technology. But the content that's coming down through that internet, through mobile phones, we feel does need to be regulated when it impacts on copyrighted material, creative industries, and child pornography. Pornography or adult stuff, from my reading of the Act, although we have gone to some debate on it, I can find nothing in the legislation actually prohibits pornography, even if we disagree with it. It gets classified, people know. Child pornography, in our view, is against this Act, but we are not providing the resources or the legislative environment for the FPB to actually crack down on this sort of crime. And so, in closing, I would just like to thank the committee and to the Film and Publications Board and to the Department of Home Affairs for the help that they've given our industry. And we wish you every success in your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see hands already. Straight to the point, I like your presentation. Went straight to the point and make wonderful suggestions, excellent weekend. And the challenges that we still have to do that, several big challenges of doing this problem. Let me start with Yorkman, followed by Hoshi, and my textbook.
So thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Yes, I think some of the proposals are quite good. I think maybe, Chair, what would be helpful, if we can get, as a committee, for instance, from SARS, an indication whether they would go along with this proposal in terms of including that in Section 18 and also the copyright issue, that we at least, in terms of making progress, that we get an indication from the government departments that are involved.
Thank you, Chair. Mine, I just want to find out from section, according to representative section 15A1, is suggesting that the right of entry afforded compliance officer appear to exceed that one of a police officer. Page 4. Right there on top. I just want to find out because in terms of police officers,
they are waiting according to standing order. How can you compare the powers of the compliance officer with that one with police? Because the police, they are using the standing order when they are operating.
Sorry, if I may respond. It's the police in the conduct of their duty, I think, are should we say, regulated by the Criminal Procedures Act. And I think if they're enforcing legislation, there is a correct way of doing it, and that is laid down by law. What we are saying is that a member of staff of a state agency, whose qualifications or background we know nothing about, is being given the right of entry onto premises which may or may not include private residences. Now, a policeman in apprehending crime cannot do that without either the prior issue of a search and seizure warrant or condemnation by a magistrate for that action. So what we're saying is that it strikes us as a bit odd that we don't want people getting off of non-compliance with the legislation because they're being, shall we say, unconstitutionally searched. Because this is what you're doing here. You're saying that they have got the right of entry to inspect. I know for a fact, and I'm sure the Film Publications Board will agree with me, that there are a number of occasions, and there is increasing resentment of both ourselves, Film and Publications Board, for going onto premises with a view to enforcing other people's rights without looking after the rights of whoever it is we're entering. And we would not like a situation where those cases, in effect, are thrown out of court because they're unconstitutional. And we've actually then, shall we say, devalued and minimized the credibility of this legislation. What we're saying is, and in fact, I think in Section 2 you've actually said they can call on the assistance of a member of the police. What we're saying is that if they want within that scope, if they are going to do anything from an enforcement point of view, that the owner of that premise is not voluntarily giving them, because remember we're back to two types of people now. We're back to, shall we say, a retailer or a video store that will say, yes, please, come in, look at my stock. If you find anything, well, let's sort it out. Or you're going to have the majority of non-compliant traders are actually criminals. And they are going to use everything in the book to actually have this thrown out. Or, back to Section 30, they're going to start saying to people, and it's not specific to the Film and Publications Board, I don't want to infer that they are corrupt in any way, but there is then people put in the way of, shall we say, being offered financial inducements not to do their job because it is not being done, shall we say, in a regulated Criminal Procedures Act way. And that's really our point.
We'll note that point when it comes to issues of the powers for these officers. When we pass the Home Affairs immigration bill, immigration officers have simply more power than police. I don't want to comment, but I'm saying that I know that immigration officers, in fact, police who perform immigration work would apply to the minister. Immigration work. Yes, there's no policeman who just stops people on immigration issues. That given immigration officers' power, each policeman applies to get those powers in them. So we can do the same with your compliance monitors, give them power. In fact, they have right as much as, same as the right that they give to immigration officers, such the premise and such institution. So we'll debate that one. I think it's a point that we look at quite the other side. I think there are other, you know, examples that we want to draw. You know, therefore, I think it's a point. Let's note it and then do some part of the industry. Next one.
Chief, thank you. Just on the point of clarity. If somebody produces a very porn movie, am I understanding correctly that in a position that this person can actually get the logo of the Film Publication Board and put it on that movie and send it into the world. Also, is that possible?
That is what is happening, yes. And so the consumer, looking at it from the consumer's point of view, you know, the credibility of the classification system is now jeopardized, because what classification can I believe or not believe? And that's where we're saying that if it becomes a prohibited mark, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a ex-policeman or anything, this is just from our experience on the ground, is that we've seen people, they use the FPB sticker for the US, the UK or the Australian classification. So they'll put the FPB sticker and they'll say 10 or 15 or something. A classification actually doesn't exist in the South African classification. But I, the consumer, I've now got it in my mind, I must look for an FPB classification because that's going to inform me. And here we have, in effect, fraudulent use. We just don't think that's been addressed to the extent that it could be or should be.
I think we'll note that fact, and then we'll look at the issues of the position that they want. The level that anyone can do. You want to make the I thought we'll note it, and we can do it again. Okay,
so Richard, I just wanted to keep focus on what you've done so far. We have transferred good track record on some of these issues, and we've told them what part of our biggest difficulties is. For instance, the issue of we're trying to centralize the sticker. We've already registered a trademark for the Film and Publication Board. Those are part of the efforts that we're making. But we've had a lot of resistance from industry that we centralize this mechanism, because we're saying, for us to be able to fully implement this, we need to have one central point. We've already engaged with DW. We've already gotten another quotation from other people that will be able to give us secure stickers that we'll definitely be able to monitor and be able to say, for sure, this is an FPB sticker. So those processes are in place. It's true that they're not quick enough, because we're also trying to take industry along. We've had half of industry saying, some are saying go ahead, some are saying no. If you are a classification authority, it's none of your business. And that touches on the second point. The issue around obtaining copyright authorization and distribution rights. We found that to be one area that is very difficult to deal with. Because we equally, again, have part of industry that are saying they are not big enough to be able to fall within subject and da-da-da. And therefore, we are actually discriminating against them as people that would require protection outside of, if they don't want to belong to subject, for instance. So we've had to balance some of those issues. And the genuine question that some of the major distributors are asking us, in fact, we are also asking as the Film and Publication Board, is around saying, how do we, as the Film and Publication Board, make sure that whatever is presented to us, whether it is a contract around distribution rights, whoever it is abroad that is from a particular zone would be giving a distribution right to an individual. How do we do not have the mechanism and the knowledge to say that it's a genuine movement or it is not. It could be transgender area. Given all sorts of, you know, presented as an authentic document, we actually do not have the means to say this is authentic or this is not. And then there's the issue of parallel import. We still are not getting any joy from DTI about what the position is, because people are still bringing in copies of DVDs, and they're not legal. How do you then say that they cannot distribute those? Because what we want is for them to have brought the products in the country legally, and our business starts when they have to distribute them and they bring them in. Those are some of the difficulties why there was not a lot of progress around. Thank you, sir.
At some point that we deliberate, we'll have to get on this other engagement that is with them, because part of your turnaround provision at some point will help us to understand where you want to be and what you can wait for. But currently, the issue of resources comes in again. That the past is being done, not even have any resource to implement what we want to do. So I think we'll have that engagement. It will take us some time, in fact, before we conclude this way. It's something that's not going to be at the end now, but finalizing the preparation, therefore the bill is going to be created in the house. we still have to go on the number of issues that have been raised there. We still have to engage around the issues of the personality of the bill itself. So it's not a very good issue. But thank you very much for the input that you have given us. We can remember some of our questions. The next round will be to take the next step and we'll come in.
The next presenter is the media monitoring project. Are you around? Okay, thanks.
Now we are moving. Just behind an hour.
Organization an opportunity to present to you. My name is William Bird. I'm the director of the Media Monitoring Project, which is a non-governmental organization in South Africa. I decided to do a PowerPoint because I think it makes things a little bit more interesting for people to watch and see, and also then you don't have to just listen to my voice and look at me. In terms of the Media Monitoring Project, we're a human rights-driven NGO that specializes in media monitoring with a goal of advancing a media culture South Africa that is critical and fair, free, diverse, and ethical. So that's my agenda. We have a human rights agenda, and I'm pleased about that. My organization started in 1993 to monitor the first democratic elections in South Africa, and since then we've conducted over 100 different media monitoring projects, so media monitoring is certainly a key area of expertise, and I'm going to be referring to some of our findings in this, which is why I'm giving you that particular information. Some of the things that I think are particularly relevant for today's discussion is the work that we've done and the research we've done on children and the representation of children in the South African media. And I'm going to be raising a few examples of some things where I think the media have heard. In terms of where we stand, MFP strongly supports the human rights focused legislation that serves to enshrine the rights of the Constitution. The protection and promotion of children's rights is well aware of when the rights of children.
I remember in 1996 when we first time interacted with the case, we had the issue of this pornography, where, and especially with women, and I'm not saying anything about women, but about children's head. I don't think it's talking about either thing of women who are always the ones who are told, and all of these things that you see on television. In an African way of doing things, it's a big insult, you know, for a person to go through the process. In an African way, all of us, the Africans here, they say it's an offense, you know, that a mother, you know, was seen watching or doing whatever, you know, what they as we present these things, the only thing we like to what if you have to end your case? And it's a bigger question of that was the social reality management is again. This is not a homosexual thing, it's a communication thing. How would you look at what you do in the church? The question that I'll need an answer to for all of us as we need to run. But let me give my colleagues direct questions. Any other questions on this? Other than, you know, having listened to
I'm sorry, Chair, are we going to get this in writing? Is that it? We don't appear to have the written section of this.
Which one? The picture?
The, yes, well, no, the whole presentation.
Ah, we have the... Yeah, we might have earlier submission than this. It's not this one. In your files, you don't have this one. Okay, no? But you have noted what you were doing. Do you have any questions that one was representing? You have noted what it was for the first. Okay.
I think the issue of in fact why there's a place to go on in the daily voice, I think, is not so much one of audience desire or market's intelligence, but more one about advertising. In terms of where we stand on pornography, I think it's a difficult thing to be looking at, because we can't just say, I don't think there's anyone that would support it. Well, there might be some, but I think in terms of from a human rights perspective, child pornography should be opposed in the strongest possible terms, and we should do whatever we can to prevent and outlaw that. And as I've said, I think the strongest support is to do that, as in fact I believe as all media have said at 10% this morning. But pornography itself, I don't think that's it's certainly we shouldn't be encouraging young people to be exposed to it. But I think we also need to be taking our reality into consideration. At the moment, the way the bill seems to be phrased around the term sexual conduct, as if though sexual conduct is itself somehow inherently bad. Whereas I think sex between consenting adults can be a lovely thing. I think that we need to kind of also remember that. Many of us who like to have sex probably think about this. Yes. I think while it's an issue, why do I smile? Because it makes me happy. I think it's a nice thing, you know. I mean, I hope all of us would think it's a happy thing. And I think between consenting adults, if they choose to engage in whatever practice, and if it means having films or DVDs or whatever, filming themselves for that matter, it's a private affair. And obviously, when you start introducing children into that environment, then that's then something quite significant shifts there. But we also need to be looking at distinguishing between pornography, child pornography, erotica, for example. Some of the gentlemen from Mises South Africa also raised the point about statues and art and these kinds of things. Because obviously I don't think we'd want to be suggesting that all of those things are art. I think in terms of the tabloid issue, yes, it's a relatively what we've seen to this point is a wholehearted yippee-ki-yay about embracing tabloids from the significant media bosses, the independents and the media 24s particularly. with very little emphasis, in fact, on what kind of roles and what sort of role they should be fulfilling, given that they are reaching new audiences. The Daily Sun gets 3.8 million people a day, which is incredible, and it's something that I think could really serve to help inform and educate people in South Africa. I think it's with this particular process, I'm hoping that the particular people concerned will be made aware that actually there are certain limits to what they can and shouldn't cover. I don't, because on a very significant level, I think tabloids provide media diversity. If people want to read about tsotsiloshes or things that invented stories or bizarre events, I think go ahead, it's their right to freedom of choice and freedom of selection of information. So I think we should encourage that. But I think that just as we expect the Maryland Guardian, for example, and the Star, for example, and the Cape Times and the Daily News, just pick on a few arbitrary ones, the EP Hero, for example, to adhere to some basic standards, I think it's a very similar, and I think it's a very fair point, and I think it's one that's been acknowledged, that we should expect the tabloids to adhere to similar conditions. And if they do adhere to those particular conditions, then I don't think that's certainly the bill needs to be applied to them in the same way that it shouldn't be applied to any of the other media. Well, certainly if you look at some of our media in the last few years, there have been a trend for some of them to become more and more tabloid in style, which often means more dramatic in the way they report things. Sometimes it means less facts. Yeah, I mean, but again, I'm not sure that, I think that that's an issue we need to be raising with readers and people who engage with those things, and you as a reader, I'm not sure that it's something that, as governments and parliaments, certainly we should be engaging with.
Thank you. Let me give the CEO just a comment on this point. That will help us for the next presenter can just put the judgment. I think the point that
she wanted. No, I just wanted to say, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that, in fact, our approach to the Filament Publication Board, in the main, our target group, in fact, more than 80% of our target group has been children. Because we believe with the limited resources that we have, we don't have a choice but to empower kids to tell them what child pornography is about. We produce a number of publications about internet safety, and that's why we actually target high school kids. Our initial approach was to actually target kids in more affluent areas because we believe those are the ones that had access to internet, to cell phones, and etc. But our research has actually shown, and as a result, we've moved the trend to now focus as well on rural kids because we've actually realized that with their cell phones, they now have a lot of access to internet and potentially inappropriate behavior.
Just a very quick final to add to that. I've seen them, and I think they're very good publications. Definitions of pornography is written in a friendly and accessible manner. But I think we need to be giving children more broader skills. Media literacy, I think Department of Education needs to come on board. And particularly in terms of mobiles, I hope you get to ask them that question.
And the media is like, but how is this say numbers? Stars, but how is this for what you call, not in conflict numbers. The 4 or 5 numbers,
right?
Okay. Something like that, yes. That you dial this number, it's for run. The media advertise for cell phones. And television advertise for cell phones again, you know. Media is like a big help with that. But we're going to give you that one. That one either totally ban the fact that you advertising of these things, you know. You can advertise for other things, you know, win a house, win a car. Win a Chevrolet there, but win a pornography, we can advertise it.
Well, I can check with you. National Lottery Board might not agree with you on that.
Okay, no, but thank you very much. But it's a very fair point that at some point, when I missed that part, so that's where most of your media generate money, in fact, from this address, rather than. And what that time, when you call the site to appear before the committee,
So the cutter would not do that, but the website was doing it. The star advertised a 12-year-old commercial girl from somewhere. That was the star you think. That she's going to say, if you can dial this number, you'll get. Just call the agent to come here. The whole question of a code of conduct did not work, your tablet did not work, nobody can do that thing except the citizen's application. So there's no quite a very usual to the finish, but they could give you that. They had that route to the finish. There's nobody doing it. So home affairs better be committed.
But we
need to be
empowering all citizens
that
if they see those things in their newspaper, they engage with them. Most newspapers and those things will welcome them.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The next presenter. The next website is the Internet Service Providers Association. I'm also told by someone said she is ready outside, so I'm not sure how do we approach it.
Thanks, Chairman. My name is Michael Sorda. I'm one of the regulatory advisors to the Internet Service Providers Association. I'm joined also by one of my colleagues, Dominic Cole, who will assist me if necessary. I really wanted to move away from some of these discussions, which are obviously very interesting discussions as a parent, as a citizen, and focus a little bit more about how the bill in particular treats the internet and new media. So I wanted to look at some general issues, a couple of concerns we have around the definition of internet service provider, some confusion there, the definition of interactive computer game, the question of games and features and those things.
Is it technically possible to apply the same standard that you want for the publications, let's say the traditional media, and compare that with the new media? I mean, is it really possible? Is it just theoretical stuff?
In the absence of response from the department, they indicate that we did submit a formal submission. We responded to the department's prior to the publication of the bill. We were given the opportunity, and we were on the one of the fortunate organizations that had the opportunity to respond to the draft bill before it was even presented to Parliament. So we did respond at that stage to the department. We then subsequently responded to this committee. So we do appreciate the double opportunity of responding. In terms of the difference between a child-oriented service provider and an internet service provider, internet service providers come in very many different flavors. It's one of the difficulties in terms of trying to define it. One of the key definitions is that there are people who facilitate access to the internet, this incredible multinational distributed network which covers, at the moment, every continent, including Antarctica, and is owned by no one, because it involves you allowing people to transit sections of your own network and onto other networks. Now, the issue is there. Most of these people are network providers. Their key business is actually putting down networks. So they build networks, fiber optic networks, satellite networks, radio networks, where legislation doesn't allow them to build their own network. They piggyback or buy services from a network like Telcom's network. But they very seldom provide the value-added services on top of it. In the beginning days of the commercial internet, back in the mid-1990s, an entity provided almost everything because there hadn't yet been the differentiation in terms of the value chain. But at the moment, as a bank, you don't provide internet connectivity to your customers. You generally hope that your customers have internet connectivity, or if you happen to be one bank with a four-letter acronym, you embark on a business venture where you actually say, hold on, this is a great idea. We're going to save costs to ourselves as well as to our customers by bringing them onto internet banking. So let's offer them internet access as part of the banking solution. But they're not experts at running an internet network. They're pretty good at running a banking network. So they're not experts at running an internet network and running IP packets. So what did they do? They went to one of the big networks.
and I ask them to run a white label service. So they run the email section of that particular offering, but the content question and the connection to the internet is run by one of the big networks. So generally banks are not in the internet business, and internet service providers are generally not in the banking business. They facilitate banks getting onto the internet. Similarly, they facilitate content companies getting onto the internet, putting their content out there. They facilitate the various media houses putting their traditional newspaper content onto the internet so you can now access through an online portal the news of the day. But generally, the people who publish content on the internet don't operate the internet structures that underlie it. And similarly, the internet service providers no longer compete with their customers. They recognize their customers are often in the content business. They don't want to compete with their customers, so they stay at their core business, which is networks and applications, and they leave the content to their customers. And that's why I say there is a differentiation. Now, who is the operator of a child-oriented service? In one or two circumstances, that may be the ISP. But generally, it's going to be somebody who has branded the service in some way and has taken it to the public and has gone looking for an internet service provider to provide it with the network connections and the experience to actually connect to the network. Not that many people have the required level of expertise, have the networking knowledge, or have spent that much money on actually building a network which allows 24/7 reliable access to the internet. So they go look for somebody, they put their content on a service, on a server belonging to an internet service provider. The internet service provider may have a vague understanding of what their client is doing, whether it's banking or insurance or information or news media or pornography or whatever it may be. They may have a vague understanding of what their client is doing. They may not even ask. But they facilitate the connection to the internet. The client then runs the service, makes the money, puts the advertising out there. And that's why we're saying, if our clients were making a profit from the actual service, then maybe there's an argument for them to have to go classify the service. But they're not. They're charging for the network that underlies it.
The point was also that the issue that would have been a relatively accessible and maybe proposed amendment as well to look at that section. So it will be here for the committee. But I know that you are in the rules in the board. So therefore we'll definitely need to have a good proposal that we're making.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. We'll speak to people about ourselves.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Members, we're going to be not yet the last, but the ceiling four. Now, therefore, don't ask next. My birthday is today, by the way. So after here, I'm going to take you for party. yes, the next.
The next teacher is PASA, PASA Service Association of South Africa.
Hi, PASA.
Hi, Vara. PASA?
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Say thank you very much.
And essentially we believe that we need to help PASA, we need to act, for your matter is at stake if your neighbor's house is burning. Currently we believe that the proposed amendment would begin to suggest that our neighbor's house is burning, and our neighbors in this case are the print and the electronic media. Because while superficially when we look at the proposed amendments to the bill, it seems they affect only the electronic and print media, we as educational, trade and academic publishers are affected by events or legislation that affect the print and electronic media. My colleague Nicole Parson will indicate how that is shown. Second and final, I'd like to say the reason why we are here is, as I say, our neighbor's house is on fire, but that does not mean we do not support the need to protect children and minors. So PASA agrees that it is absolutely necessary for adequate and effective steps to be found to protect children and minors from sexual abuse, from exploitation for pornographic purposes. But these important initiatives should not be conflated with the important objectives of the Films and Publication Act, which is currently in force. If child protection legislation is inadequate, then the amendments should be made specifically under the headings to counter sexual abuse and the depiction of or promotion of sexual abuse. The objectives of the Films and Publications Act are different. The Act is primarily intended to classify audiovisual material in order to give consumers and parents a clear signal of what content is appropriate for which audiences. Child pornography or the depiction of sexual abuse of children is never permissible for any audience. The issue is therefore not one of classification, but rather of finding adequate and effective ways to eradicate this scourge. My colleague Nicole Parson will go into the details of the four primary points that we wish to present. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, would to me looks very much like a chairman and members of the committee, of which the gender balance is being shifting throughout the day, and other members present. Thank you very much for the opportunity. What I would like to do is just give a very brief overview of the four main points that we are putting forward. You've heard me use these arguments in earlier.
I'd like to thank you.
And we have when we call upon you, we have more legal advisors here. So we seem quiet. But definitely, so the point that we are raising, I think we're following your definition. So they're quite very real, but I think we have noted them back here. That it's obvious from part of our years, especially in that section, in the first issue. We look at that quite very short. Another section that we are raising here. As is the nature of public hearings, we'll come to then, we know when we deliberate, we change this document again, and the one that has like, I just believe, and I'm going to show you this. Therefore, can I call members in the session? Yes, Jose.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, let me start by clarifying that we are not subcommittee for Home Affairs. We are not subcommittee, we are the portfolio committee on Home Affairs. Second question, Chairperson. And page 3, the presenter is suggesting that the newspaper daily should continue to be fully exempted from the operation of the Film and Publication Act. I just want to know from the presenter if they violate the same self-governing regulation, what must the department do if they keep on publishing pornography? If they know the law does not allow them.
Secondly, you also suggest that sexual abuse and creation of child pornography should be counted as part of the overall strategy for child protection. Because you are against the suggestion of the department, how are you suggesting that the department should protect child pornography? Can you give us your own suggestion? The last chairperson, the presenter also suggested that the Internet Publication Act should remain focused on classification, not on censorship. Can he clarify, because the Act stated clearly what is the objective of the Act according to the documents in front of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
My colleague must please assist if she wants to and has to. If I understood the questions correctly, the first one dealt with what to do if publications keep on publishing child pornography. Personally, I think there are legal ways of dealing with this if there is even just one transgression of a law. I think we've been hearing this morning of a number of newspapers and newspaper companies that are looking exactly at this, and I think we've moved quite a way forward in the past few years, if I've listened to what's been reported this morning, in dealing internally with such abusive acts of publishing. The publishing company for which I work has very strict and severe ethic codes, and I know that people are dealt with severely if they transgress those ethical codes. And sexual abuse of minors is covered by those ethical codes. I do think that what we've heard this morning, will enable the society and large to deal effectively with news publications that might be transgressing on this field. While the department can protect children from sexual abuse, I must confess I'm not that well conversant with exactly what the Department of Home Affairs does and can do. The one thing which I, the way in which I ended also, which I want to emphasize, this is a systemic issue. It's not one department alone that can deal with it. It affects education. The Department of Education. It affects being children being taught how to act if they suspect there might be acts of sexual abuse aimed at them. I think that is happening. So I don't think one department on its own can do it. But I do think that the kind of interaction that you heard about this morning, where government officials sit down with representatives from media and look at specific issues and see how they can support one another, I think that is a very useful road to go. And I think we've heard very positive and constructive examples of those this morning. The object of the Act, if I look at the Act of 1996, it starts off by saying the Act to provide for the classification of certain films and publications, to that end to provide for the establishment of a film publication board and a film publication review board, to appeal certain laws to provide for matters connected therewith. So it seems that the primary focus of the Act itself is to provide for the classification of certain films and publications. Now, unless the bill intends to change that aim, that function of this Act, it should still have this as its main aim, classification. and not the kind of very broad, if I may use the term censorship, that we see emerging in the bill. I want to emphasize again that we can understand the concern, we understand the attempts, you know, to move in this field. But I want to repeat that term chilling effect, which a bill like this becoming might have been on the term. I hope that dealt with the issue.
I don't want to ask any questions, but was very quick from when that I lost it. On the issue of the application that we physically dismiss, we have a problem when we deal with something that contains sexual expression on it or pornography on it to be classified. As this country says, any application in South Africa that contains, you know, a pornography or whatever, you know, a, in that line of a sexual, you know, a material, must be classified. Do you have a problem with that? Will you call that censorship?
Chair, I would not even consider the issue of classification. I think we heard earlier this morning from the Christian Network group, I'm not totally sure of the exact name of it, but there was the very first admission. I almost want to repeat what they said, that pornography, and you know, talking about pornography and material that depicts sexual abuse of minors should not even be classified. It should not be there. In other words, classified on what you call it, that it can't be distributed, undistributable, something like that, the term is used in the bill. That kind of material doesn't belong in society. We are not in favor of a kind of classification which will put newspapers and news media under a kind of threat that if they don't, if they know beforehand, you know, there's going to be a whole process that the freedom of distributed information, if you want to call it freedom of speech, will be limited. We're not in favor of that kind of classification. But we are definitely not in favor of any kind of sexual abuse, particularly of young children.
Nothing important except to say the whole question of classification when it comes to pornographic material actually gives it a pseudo-legitimacy. So it's actually not negotiable to consider classification for pornographic material, because then we are legitimizing and saying it is okay to have this. It belongs somewhere, and yet we are saying it belongs nowhere. There is no space for it. Thank you.
And thank you very much again for the presentation. And as I've already said, that the issues that are raised quite critical areas that we can address. Members, I think we are still fine. Having a lot of water and juice will help you to the next stage.
Yes, sir. The next one is wireless application service provider association. Are you? Oh, it's you. Okay, thanks.
Wireless.
Wireless. Good afternoon, all. My name is Leon Thurman. I'm chairman of the, or chairperson, as I would like to call it, of the Wireless Application Service Providers Association. I know it's late, so I'll try and progress the presentation as rapidly as I can. You do have it in front of you. You should also have the code of conduct, the Westwood code of conduct, I just want to acknowledge Mr. Mike Silver sitting behind me. He gave the ISP, the ISPA presentation a few minutes ago. He also happens to wear your hat as Westwood's regulatory advisor. Might speak with skill shortages in the country, but there it is. We do welcome him. Okay. Just the agenda, sort of background on WASPA. Wireless gives it away. It's actually mobile, but wireless in a sense. Also, our work with the Publications Board.
Very productive workout, I must say. We just had a workshop with them in February. We'll also talk about specific actions and items in the bill, the classification committees, for example, where we propose a pro-regulatory approach, and also some additional comments. So, a bit about WASPA, Wireless Application Service Providers Association. We were established in August 2004, so it's a relatively young organization, but matured very quickly under the circumstances, under fire, as they say. Represents WASPs, or Wireless Application Service Providers. And generally speaking, you've alluded to them earlier, but WASPs generally provide things that you come across, such as ringtones, mobile games, voting in interactive television, for example. WASPA engages in a self-regulatory scheme, which I'll go into great depth. We have about 90 members, representing most of the mobile content and services industry in South Africa, and also a very specific code of conduct which you have in front of you, which I'm glad to say has very prudent enforcement. We are supported by Cell C, MTN, and Vodacom, and have been so from the beginning. And formed under the framework of Chapter 11 of the ECP Act, which provides for industry representative bodies and also requires a code of conduct. Okay, until recently, each of the mobile operators had their own set of rules insofar as how WASPs could provide content and display content to consumers and subscribers in the country. The rules are part of the WASP contract between the network and the WASP. And rules related to pricing, ethics, advertising, but like most things, the competitive environment, the rules were not identical, so it created loopholes and created the need for the genesis of a uniform code of conduct. So, after a couple of months of deliberations with quite a few stakeholders, the WASPA code of conduct was put together and has been enforced from 1 September 2005. We also have a supplementary code, the advertising rules, which are about 300 pages long, so I wouldn't burden you with and the environment with printing them all out. But they've been in effect since 1 January 2006. And the effect of that, for example, on television, you can see immediately and also in the press. The code of conduct and the advertising rules both integrate many national laws. The rules are quite consistently across all three mobile networks. And the rules are revised constantly as any issues arise. And WASPA rules are now being applied to other countries. There's been applications in countries that are involving mobile content services to use the WASPA code and the WASPA code of conduct. Okay, so very quickly, just to summarize the code of conduct document you have in front of you, the advertising rules, the code of conduct has advertising rules and their format.
When the current buys the phone, send them credit, so that children will not have much for that. You can't push it there.
It's a very important point. Can I just say that there is something under the institutional legislation to register all cell phones. So you will have to get some identity with that cell phone to see exactly how old you are. So it's not just going to be anonymous anymore. There are initiatives from a different department for that matter for dealing with this, but so sure. My understanding and the understanding of our discussion from the board is that the selling of what we would understand as pornography, but more correctly terms triple X material, sorry, double X material, is not allowed to be distributed on cell phones or in any other mechanism. X18 material cannot be distributed on cell phones because there isn't face-to-face verification of the age of the purchaser as required in terms of the legislation, that it needs to be purchased from a licensed premises. So at the moment, no pornography, or should I rather say, or
18 material can be provided over cell phones. People are representing adult-orientated content as pornography. Obviously, it seems to have a better marketing bent than saying we're going to show you adult-orientated material. But we've made it very clear to our members, and the Access Center at the moment makes it illegal to distribute anything that hasn't been classified, or anything that, if it was classified, would be classified as XX or X18 by a cell phone. What we find very difficult to do, and what Vodacom is trying to do on a server basis, is to say, with this device, which has stopped being just a telephone device and has now become a data access device, so you can now access a download site in Outer Mongolia or Namibia or wherever it may be, where there may be no regulatory environment. We're saying it's very difficult on the phone itself to prevent access to the general internet, especially with the new, more sophisticated 3G HSDPA cell phones. We're saying on a server basis, on the network level, there can be additional filtering put in place. It's not perfect. As long as those sites are not in South Africa, this committee can do very little about it, other than requiring, as Section 24C currently provides, that the provider should give a fairness. In fact, it should be anybody, an employer who provides an employee with a cell phone. Anybody who says, I don't want this tool, which is being used as a communications tool, as a business tool, to be used as a mechanism for gambling, pornography, or other materials, and then providing that lockdown on the phone. Now, I'm sure we can have the discussion with the mobile network operators as to whether the default should be locked and you would need to go in with an identity document in order to unlock. That doesn't still entitle you to get XX or X18 material on the phone, but it may unlock it for things like online poker tournaments or things of that nature which currently would be blocked if you use the blocking device. You know, I think that's where the outcomes basis is our suggestion is, don't talk about software, because downloading software on a particular phone, one phone uses a different operating system to another phone, it becomes technically difficult. Our suggestion is rather have a facility where it can be done. Maybe the discussion needs to happen is to say the default is off. If you're an adult, go, bring your ID, take it to a shop. When you're doing your RICA registration as required by the Interception Act, go and prove your age and ask your phone to be unlocked. But, you know, that's the debate I think they have with the operators.
So I just want to talk Interception still uses that X18 and XX stuff is out there and available on cell phones. It might be because of late night television ads that between television programs that suggest that. But that's just a marketing ploy by those who are advertising. The reality is that it's not allowed, and from our perspective, not many people are doing that. If they are doing that, they're doing so illegally in terms of the Act and in terms of our code.
I must just add, as one of the adjudicators, if we find somebody doing that, besides for reporting them to the board, for the board to institute the appropriate prosecution, we will shut them down. And the networks will support us in shutting their business down.
We asked this question just for us to understand that there is a capable of doing this. If we are able to look at the other possibility, somebody was saying that this community is like not in push. Because we want to be so robust and bring fundamentalism into the whole thing that no, people must not see this thing, you know, but including every sort of process, and just conducting people are dealing with this thing from a delegation. The schools already are complaining that when they are busy teaching the learners are busy downloading and responding to the pornography. We see that how do you look at the screen servers, most of them very empty that you see there. Therefore, service provider saying that I'm able to do this thing only when we know we can hack. If we don't know, therefore we don't know. But we need to come up with some kind of a mechanism to address the problem. Spreading for the country or children like this, something that we have to take into consideration. But let me remember, I know a revolution in fact of the committee, you'll see the outcome of the bill. There's a wonderful position on that one, which would help you in fact to understand the management.
Thank you, Chairperson. While I agree with the recommendation from the presenter, Chairperson, my only serious problem, Chairperson, if you check their code of conduct, they are under disclaimer. They call themselves disclaimer. Yes, Chairperson. And in terms of PSMA, if you are under disclaimer, all of them, they must be lost. And they are also saying, Chairperson, all members are strongly advised to seek proper legal counsel. I want to know from the presenter, Chairperson, whether where are they accountable to? Because in terms of this, I don't know whether it's a peace you are being or you are a gentleman's agreement.
So we can continue, but let me just say this, is that the code of conduct was formulated in response to the Act 2011 provisions. So we developed a code of conduct that we hope will be accepted by the Department of Communications, specifically the Minister, to give us rights under the ILB regulations. So this is a formulated document that will go to the Minister for approval. But I have to say that the document was in part written by a lot of lawyers, so that's why you're seeing a whole lot of disclaimers. It is adopted, but it's not adopted officially by the Department of Communications. It is in effect, and has been in effect since 2005, but it's a formulative document for the DRC to utilize in terms of assessing us as an industry representative body. We discussed it with the IP regulations were just released a few months ago, so we need to apply to the Minister, and then for the IP, let me say this, the IP regulations took, I think, 4 years to come out. So, we don't have to debate it, you know, the process being less speedy once we have the document in. Mike, you must say.
If I could just add, I think there are two major issues. The first is, as Leon indicated, it was formulated in terms of the industry representative body's requirements under Chapter 11 of the ECT Act. There will be minor revisions required now that the regulations have come out. If they're not toothless regulations, while there is a disclaimer of it, the regulations are not at all toothless, because MTN and CELC require membership. MTN and CELC require membership of WASPA, which involves compliance with the Code of Conduct, and Vodacom requires compliance with the WASPA Code of Conduct and adherence to any of the outcomes of any proceedings in terms of that Code of Conduct before you can connect to their network. So we, to some extent, hold the ultimate power over content providers, because if we really feel that they're behaving in an unacceptable manner as adjudicators, we have the ultimate power, which is kick them out of our organization. And once they're out of our organization, they can't connect to the networks, which means they can't get to the customer. So we really hold a lot of power, and that Code of Conduct is taken very seriously by our members, because the John mentioned something being suspended for 30 days. To apologize. When Leon mentioned somebody being suspended for 30 days, that means 30 days of no revenue. And if they carried on doing that, as I indicated to the chair, if we find anybody who's actually providing XAT material, we will kick them out. We've made it clear in our advisory that is something that's beyond the pale. It will destroy the industry in this country. And we will kick them out. They cannot build on any of the mobile networks, so they shut up their business.
We're going to re-engage on this issue with members of the committee. Because what we still see is what we say is when young members are found to be whatever it is. to the mission, because when we are same code of conduct, here 7.73.71, it talks of exactly what we're complaining about. But the only thing is to take on the data directly. You and television command together, television advertising different. Television advertising is you know? So, tomorrow when we meet with that, we're going to be here tomorrow. But we need to come up with a solution. That's all. It's another point. If this is where a deliberate solution of pornography is, it's very good to the children. If we're coming up with solutions that even when you put somebody around the issue of children, you can do it. Sometimes I make this call that, what does it mean? That, but for them, it's going to business money, you know? And the balance is a problem. It's a balance. It puts a ban on pornography, cell phone, does it help? And cell phone can access, you know, the other networks outside the area of operation. So it's something that was debated and come up with some kind of way forward. Because, I mean, for 96 years, we're dealing with this issue of pornography. That time it was on television, now on cell phones, internet, and all of that. Sometimes we don't have a control, the internet is something that, but the money away. You know, you go to the market just across the country. You can try and get any network, you'll never get anything on pornography. Just across the border. You'll never get anything. I don't know what is it that any that you know, to make sure that they're not exposed. If you get that television, the country that is in common, they're frustrated. I'm not saying that because of lack of pornography, that's what I'm saying. I never find it. Or several neighbors around Mozambique, I've been to Mozambique, and I've been to a lot of that. You don't find people that you do in the area, in which we have so much, because they give us money. You're not being control the situation so that our children are not exposed. And women in general. Because the women who are trapped in the they form some of the stress. It's homophobic completely without tending to all of that at some point. So they come here for feeling things and all of that, then they don't go there. They can't go there. And women have to get exposed to all of this. All what we see. And all the programs we're talking about, so the environment is one of these things. You know, users of text and all of these things that are so harmful for women and our children. As responsible parents, I think deep down in our interaction in development of technology, we'd like to keep some of these things as compared to so that's not I mentioned sure that you still want to have the time, but the document that both of you are interested in. That we met as well as tomorrow when we meet with the other, what is it called, yes, we'll see this around and we'll change tomorrow. You met with the recording yesterday, how we do this. But I think there's come to a point where the committee cannot be further on these issues. It doesn't have to come up with solutions. What do you think? Have a wonderful day. Your document was quite useful document. Yeah, that's from the last time we met. The thing is of the step the same thing as compared to but yeah, we still want to see much. All right, thank you very much. Is that the last?
Sir, it seems as if the young person's link is not around. Are you? Then can we check that the Center for Constitutional Rights? Are you here?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, and a happy birthday to you. We even brought you a party back in order to make our presentation shorter. It wasn't only because it's your birthday, it was for the benefit of the entire portfolio committee. In the party back, you find out by looking at the pamphlets in it, who we are and what we stand for. There's a very short DVD, which is about as far as we can get with technology, setting out what the Center for Constitutional Rights stands for. We stand for upholding the Constitution and the values which underpin the National Accord which gave rise to the Constitution. Also in the fact is a copy of our written submissions, which go into great detail about the bill which is under discussion before this committee. A copy of a magazine which we publish from time to time, in which you will find coverage of this bill on page 4. Also coverage of the notion of press freedom, which relates to this bill, an article which begins on page 1 and continues through right to page 20. I simply draw the attention of the committee to these features in order to enable them to lift out of the documentation that which is of relevance to their deliberations on this most difficult bill. Finally, in the back is a press release which is more for the benefit of the media than for the benefit of the committee, but it is there because it provides a handy summary of the highlights of the difficulties which we have with the bill. And having said that our function is to uphold the Constitution, I don't need to remind members of the committee that when they became members of Parliament, they in fact swore or solemnly promised to uphold the Constitution, and that to the extent that this bill contains matter which is unconstitutional, it needs, in terms of the oath of office which members of the committee have proposed, to be addressed very seriously. I don't think anybody who has made representations before this committee has suggested that child pornography is a good thing and that child pornography should be freely allowed. Obviously, it is an evil in our society, and it is something that needs to be controlled. Our appeal is to this committee to see to it that it is controlled in a manner which does not fall foul of the Constitution. I remind members of the committee that in their present function, that is, they are exercising a legislative function as a parliamentary select committee. In terms of section 44, subsection 4 of the Constitution, 44.4, when exercising its legislative authority, Parliament is bound only by the Constitution and must act in accordance with and within the limits of the Constitution. To the extent that this bill has been placed before the committee by the executive or by the ministry, I remind members that members of the cabinet are accountable collectively and individually to Parliament for the exercise of their powers and the performance of their functions. Members of cabinet must act in accordance with the Constitution. That appears in section 92.2 and section 92.3 of the Constitution. Now what then, in that context, are the provisions of the Constitution to which this committee must have regard when it finalizes its deliberations regarding the content of the book. I do it in numerical order because it simply makes it easier for members. Firstly, there is the question of freedom of expression. In terms of section 16 of the Constitution, which is part of our Bill of Rights, freedom of expression is a guaranteed right to everyone and includes freedom of the press and other media, freedom to receive or impart information or ideas, freedom of artistic creativity, academic freedom, freedom of scientific research. One has to remember that there is a qualification in the Constitution to freedom of expression. That qualification is set out in section 16.2 of the Constitution, which provides that the right of freedom of expression does not extend to A, propaganda for war, B, incitement of imminent violence, or C, advocacy of hatred that is based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion, and that constitutes incitement to cause harm. The words "and that constitutes incitement to cause harm" have simply been overlooked by the draftsman. From the nods of acknowledgement that I get from members of the committee who are still awake and listening to me, I see that I don't need to expand on this point. It is obvious that the definition of hate speech is built on the
Constitution. Thank you very much. There's been quite a detailed constitutional input, and I hope that our learned lawyers here have looked at some of the arguments. But the members of the committee who themselves are lawyers sort of engage around the issues of the constitutional issues. Yeah, hopefully followed by Swan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask the presenter, Chairperson, in his presentation, categorically put it clear that everybody is against pornography. According to the understanding, freedom of speech includes child pornography. If the answer is no, in order to regulate these anomalies, what must the department do? Because, as you know, and read the newspapers, and the TVs, and cell phones, these things are happening. Is it proper to convince Peter in order to rob Paul? Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Sir President. Thank you for the summary of the constitutional provision, everybody. I don't know whether you are okay with the Open Publications Act of provisions and charge, but section 27 as it's presently formulated makes it an offence to possess or distribute child pornography. Now we're fully aware that section 22C exempts the press, but should that be called 27 be made applicable to the press, would you have a problem with that? Because that would be, I'm sure the press itself would not have a problem with that, because they say they don't distribute child pornography. What would be your constitutional sense of that provision, only that provision, being applicable to the printed media? Follow.
I think it's just that if I have sentences somewhere,
you mentioned something like there should be an unconstitutional means to address the bill if you could expand the system. Okay.
If I can deal with the last question first, I was probably speaking too fast, but the point I make is that it is part of the duty of this committee to ensure that the product of its labors complies with the Constitution. There is no way that an unconstitutional bill will pass muster for the courts. It will be struck down by the courts because the courts have the final say as to whether legislation is constitutional or unconstitutional. So if you heard me saying there's an unconstitutional way of doing it, then I misspoke. What I was trying to say is that the evils of child pornography have to be dealt with in a manner that is constitutionally compliant. That is really the act of the address here. Now, coming back to the first question, which is, I always much prefer if you rob Peter to pay Paul, but that's mainly because my name is Paul. So. The inwardness of what is being dealt with in terms of this bill is not pornography as such. This bill is about, if one looks at the objects in clause 2A of the bill, it is about protecting children from potentially disturbing, harmful, or age-human inappropriate materials and against sexual exploitation, degradation, publications, films, interactive computer games, mobile cellular telephones, and on the internet, which is what my little friends who have called the aeroplane already were discussing at some length earlier this afternoon. So, the question of child pornography being an organ, if you're going to use the Afrikaans word, I think it's not an issue. Pornography in the bedroom of adults who are happy to have pornography in their bedroom or on their DVD or in their magazine or in their Kama Sutra or whatever, that is not an order. We here in this committee are seeking to protect children against the exploitation and exposure to child pornography. That's what it's about. So, the idea of regulating on the basis of the classification is not an unconstitutional one, provided in every regard to the provisions of the Constitution that I have alluded to, and in every regard to the provisions of the bill, which keep the red lights flickering as to whether you are on the right or the wrong side of what is constitutional. Which brings me to Mr. Swartz's question, which is, in essence, is it all right to bring the press within the provisions of the existing legislation from the point of view of not permitting child pornography in respect of the press in general? And I cannot see any constitutional difficulty with that. That is really a high political question, rather than a legal question. The chances of the press successfully arguing before the Constitutional Court that their exemptions are such that their ability to publish child pornography are approximately zero, in my respectful opinion. 26 years working on the other side of the park.
The main thing of yours would be for us to move forward, taking into account the issue of the marriage, but at the same time, look at the kind of thing. Because I'm trying to get what would be the correct way of doing it without using this hammer that we mentioned on. He's talking about this powder in the school. What is the powder that we want to suggest with this objective that we're putting, what's the objective? Rather, you know, going into just part of the problem is about the distributor, this media. Therefore, media is exempted from contributing a distributor. And within their own code of conduct, then, you know, you're in charge, whatever your name is. This committee is responsible, which is the communication board. It's responsible for regulating the industry generally. And if we say we need these people, don't help them, leave them, because they are protected by the constitution. And these rights are not absolute. Limited. Therefore, we can come in a legislative form. Now, what would be a suggestion of yours? Just a brief, or maybe go back, down, interface, and come back to us. They will still open for engagement on these issues. We'll listen to almost everybody, and anyone who wants to come back and assist is welcome. The interact with the committee, come back and say, you know what, I've looked at this whole thing. The only thing I've looked at was the other constitution, but the problem we're trying to address. This would be the right way to address it, you know, which means you may tell the thing aside, I mean, tell the fact, you know, and really come up with something that will have a hearing, a lot of what is going to be. This is the belief of my engagement, in fact, with yourself, because we engage here, we try to get people to come and see. But this is the right way, the way that we are moving in, it's not the correct way, because it may not have the constitutional matter. Therefore, look at this way. You know, but making sure that the country is here to India.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if you go into the detail of our submission, which has been prepared by my learned friend, Mr. Haviland, and addressed to you on the 24th of April, we're giving you an extra copy in your party pack. So it's there in great detail, and we've attempted to be a constructive participant in the debate to the extent that we make suggestions in relation to getting the drafting tightened up, the definitions clearer, the exemption of the press out of the way, and simply because the self-regulation of the press is, in your view, dysfunctional, doesn't mean that self-regulation of the press cannot be a proper mechanism for dealing with it. We hear from the electronic media people that have the means to switch off the mic, turn off the water, simply send everybody to jail immediately, which is pretty bad straight, far more effective than national legislation.
Continue engaging on the submission. I will call on you anytime if you will definitely call on you for further engagement. Same applies to what the police say yesterday. As we come to the conclusion of the meeting, is there anything that members want to say
about the issues of the sexual offense as well? There's a whole lot on pornography, child pornography, and this impact upon the state. And I'd like to have an opportunity to look at that as well. But clearly we've got self-regulation, but then also that goes about the part that should have been part of the regulation, it's an offence to distribute as well. So we need to be aware of those provisions of the sexual offences as well.
And
what's
for the newspaper? Not the other one. should not be that. Although it's only because it's still in complication and it's really not. Therefore, there are, but I think there's a need. You know, there's a need for this engagement with the media. Our science culture committee, another group of parliament, because at some point during their interviews, especially the interview on Sunday, SAFM in the morning, and then one of the, I think it's one of the editors, but I missed the name of it, but they were citing a number of pieces of legislation that they are not happy about. It sort of brings some kind of a censorship and all of that. And this lack of engagement, that's why we are emphasizing this morning, the point to understand why there was no engagement. I think it will help a lot, in fact. Because here you look at issues that we're trying to address ourselves. They're looking at profit again. Because they themselves confirm the standard of what you mean by flight for the what they call it, subversion. And clearly, that is a real challenge that ourselves as parliament carry the mandate of the public that they you, but they give you 5 years, they are going to say, after 5 years, they ask you to attending this to the input from the public through our roadshow on these things, definitely something is there. On ourselves, engaging with them, we'll say it's fine, but if we had to bring that element of the public, you know, where there was total rejection on pornography, you're all right. Sometimes you find that we do things that instead of your book, you have to say something, but the public doesn't do it. And then people come and celebrate how they are spending, how much they are now spending the newspaper, you know, in fact, from 20,000 to now 3 million. And look at what is the best in the country. And the content of what was in the country. You know, and here we have created a body called the Human Foundation. That's sort of help us recommend people. And we need to try it. If it comes back to us and says, we're unable to move on this point, as long as we're within the position, I mean, that's what we're looking at. But we need to come up with something that we can address. They're not people, you know, legislating all the time as a concept of legislation, but come up with mechanisms that sort of things and structures that they set up. At some point, we'll do the very same assessment of the body, of this body. We'll have to sit down as a committee and look at what is it in fact that. In doing such that, I know the issue of the budget is one of the cultural problems that we'll have to deal with. All this wonderful thing, if I was to say, the board will not be able to implement one of the things for them to be able to implement. Therefore, members, let's go back. Tomorrow I know that we'll be more of an engagement. Okay? Yes. But for now, we'll finish tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, we've still got two organizations that have been waiting for a long time.
Alright, I'm sorry for that, because I was following the US code. I thought that it was going to be done. I'm sorry, I really apologize, but you're welcome, sir. As I said, that you can share one throughout, it's not a problem. Thank you very much, sir. Alright, sorry.
Resources aimed at prevention of child abuse and neglect? Are you have one with you?
Oh, okay.
Your
submission is here. Okay, sorry for that amendment. Let's proceed the members of the committee. Mama, good.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, members of the committee, I truly thank you for the opportunity at this late hour. It's my first interaction with the committee on home affairs, and I'm duly impressed with the diligence of this committee. I have worked with some other committees of which I do not hold such a high opinion. So thank you for that. I'll try and speak quickly, and I think I will give you an abridged version of what I was intending to do, taking note of the time that's available.
Right to the point, I'm going to go right to the point. Let me give members an opportunity. Members, we still have questions. Okay. Now, the thing about we definitely take into account the recommend. Because it goes straight to the core of some of the issues that we get sort of bring some kind of solution to this, how we should move forward with that. And therefore, it will be quite a very useful document for us in the liberation. We want to thank you very much for your presentation and the manner in which you have really moved very fast and presented the document. But because you understand the issue, when you do the issue, it's just very easy for you to present, even if you have to do the document. You know. But the real thank you very much for this. It's a useful document.
The last one, Chef, is in SA Catholic Bishop Conference. Are you still here with us?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Catholic Bishop, you know, it's supposed to start with you. But thank you very much and for understanding that we really operated under quite a tremendous pressure this morning. But we have managed to work an hour in. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't keep you long at all. I should just say that we had a correspondence with Magibela Mange, who confirmed to us our time slot for today at 4:30 in the afternoon. That's why I arrived at 4 o'clock. It was not a sign of disrespect to the committee that we weren't here this morning. We just were given the wrong information. So, you have our written copies of our submission. It's very short, and I'm not going to really go through it in any detail. I want to just refer to certain points in the submission and others that have come up in other submissions made today by undesirable or harmful materials, particularly harmful, can be transmitted. And we believe that there is a duty on them to take whatever steps are necessary to prevent that, or at least to minimize that. And we're not that impressed to hear from the industry that it's not possible, or they only provide the network, or they only provide the infrastructure, or whatever. A couple of years ago, the government in China clamped down on internet access for political reasons. And they made it clear to some of the major international internet service providers that unless you block certain sites, which we as the Chinese government find politically undesirable, we won't allow you to operate here. Unfortunately, some of those service providers did then block the sites. In other words, they found it more important for their own commercial benefit, for their own profit, to continue operating in China, even under the conditions, the anti-democratic conditions imposed by the Chinese government. The point is, they were able to block those sites. It was in their interest to do so. And so we're not impressed to hear how difficult it is for service providers to block this kind of action. They must find ways of doing that, that when it affects their profits, they can do. I also don't think that it's true to say that this is not the right place, this piece of legislation, to set about protecting children, and that it should rather be done in the Child Justice Act or in the Sexual Offences Act or wherever else. Maybe those are also suitable places. But this bill does deal with precisely what it says, films and publications. And if there's material in films and publications which is harmful to children, then let this bill deal with it and let this bill seek to protect those children. Point was also made earlier that this should be about categorization and not censorship. I fail to see what the real difference is between those things. If you categorize a thing in such a way that because of its harmful nature, it may not be distributed, or it may not be possessed, you're censoring it. You're just drawing a line through it and saying, no, you can't have that, or you can't sell that, or you can't distribute that. In that sense, we see no problem with the way that the bill sets about its process of controlling this kind of material. A number of submissions have raised the question of prior restraint, in the sense that they're saying it's undesirable to bring these laws into existence which cause people to stop doing things or to be scared of doing things before they've even done them. I want to use that example also to address the word to this committee as one of the earlier presenters has done when he gave you a pocket lecture on the Constitution and your duties as Parliament under the Constitution. I don't disagree with what he said. But I would say this as well. Parliament must never be scared to test what the Constitution actually says. Parliament must not shy away from taking hard decisions of this kind, just in case maybe it will end up passing an unconstitutional law or one or two provisions in the law will eventually be thrown out by the court. Some of the members will remember 1997 when the Minimum Sentence Act was going through Parliament. At that time, a number of voices were raised to say it's unconstitutional because it interferes with the discretion of the courts in sentencing. Well, 10 years later, we still have that act. It went to the Constitutional Court and they said it's okay. A few years later, when the Prevention of Organized Crime Act was going through Parliament, the same thing was being said. It's unconstitutional, this, that, and the other thing. That went to the Constitutional Court. Certain aspects of it were found unconstitutional, but by and large, the court said it's okay. And the list goes on. A couple of years ago, the Anti-Terrorism Bill was going to the Justice Committee, and one by one, people came to the committee and told the committee it's all unconstitutional. It hasn't yet been found unconstitutional by the court. So, Parliament must never set out, of course, to undermine the Constitution, but at the same time, please don't be scared to test what the boundaries are, especially when your objectives are likely very serious, very important, and very urgent. Section 16.2 is the one that I want to just address in any detail at all. Because that seems to be one of the sections in the bill which has caused the most concern, particularly among the media. And it says that any person who publishes or advertises any publication that contains visual presentations, descriptions, or representations of or amounting to sexual conduct, propaganda for war, incitement to imminent violence, or the advocate of hatred. And if one reads some of these submissions and some of the articles in the press over the many months, the whole debate about is this going to muzzle the press? We come across ideas or sentiments that say, well, this means that the press will no longer be able to report on rape because they will be describing sexual conduct. Press will no longer be able to report on a speech made by someone involved in a war situation. I see that there is in the Editors Forum submission here a reference to a speech by Colin Powell in the United States, and they're saying, well, because he was explaining there why the US decided to go to war in Iraq, that is propaganda for war, and no newspaper could publish it under this group. I find it hard to think that serious people are coming to Parliament with that kind of claim. I don't know if the drafters of the bill are present at the moment. The way that I read that clause, first of all, the word visual applies to presentations, descriptions, and representations. When we interpret any law, we give it first of all its ordinary meaning. Then we give it the meaning that is most in line with the Constitution. It's always assumed that Parliament intends its legislation to be in line with the Constitution. When a piece of legislation may inhibit a freedom which is protected in the Constitution, it must be interpreted in the way that least inhibits that freedom. Now, if we apply those ordinary rules of interpretation to that clause, what it says to me is, you may not publish a visual presentation or description or representation of these certain forbidden things. That is a much narrower thing. And when it comes to the sexual conduct, as it is then described in the legislation, and it gives a whole list of what constitutes sexual conduct, it's very difficult to imagine a newspaper needing to publish a photograph, a visual description or representation. in order to convey a news report or an article of analysis or an article of education, a photograph that would offend those definitions. So I think that there's been something of an overreaction in many ways to this. If I'm wrong, then it's only going to take one court case or a court to say, Parliament, you went too far. This doesn't work. And then Parliament will have to amend the legislation. So the idea that this bill as it stands now is somehow going to bring the roof down on press freedom and freedom of expression, to me, is very far-fetched. Maybe, again, I say that the legislation does need to be tightened up here or there. There may be one or two phrases or clauses that are a bit vague. And no doubt the drafters are going to take note of all the representations that have been made. But I just think it's important for someone, after everything you've heard today, to perhaps just say a little bit from the other side. We don't feel that this is a threat to press freedom. And if anyone, be it the Film and Publications Board or the government, were to decide to use it as a threat, then surely our constitution and our courts are strong enough to prevent that from happening. Last point I want to make, Mr. Chair, is around the great reaction that there has been to the fact that the bill now repeals the blanket exemption of the press from these requirements. I'm not going to say that the Catholic Church feels one way or the other, you know, with absolute conviction on this point. We can see certainly that having the press and the broadcast media exempted is a very useful thing. It's very practical. It gives them the freedom to go ahead and publish what they believe is in the public interest. And there are mechanisms, such as the Ombudsman and various codes of conduct, etc., which people can use to make objections. However, on the other side, we are concerned that some parts of the print media and the broadcast media are not upholding their side of that bargain. This exemption, as they say, is the result of an agreement reached many, many years ago with the previous government. I don't know what the terms of that agreement were, but I can't believe that it was envisaged at the time that newspapers, ordinary daily newspapers, would be free to publish some of the material that they do now publish. I'm referring to the tabloids. I'm referring to a number of photographs of naked or semi-naked women. Pages of advertising for quite explicit sexual services and chat lines and so on. The committee is aware of these things. Our question is, are these things legitimately what we might call newsworthy? Are they the type of material that one expects to find in an ordinary daily newspaper to which everyone has access? Because there's no restriction on the sales or the distribution of those newspapers. In other words, what I'm saying is it seems to us that to some extent, those who are claiming a right to this exemption are not playing their part. They're not keeping up their side of the bargain. And so perhaps it is time for Parliament to step in and say, well, we are going to give the authorities the tools to apply to this problem if necessary. Not that every newspaper would have to submit itself before publication. Obviously that's nonsense. It's impractical, it would never work, and it would be unconstitutional. But it does mean that if a newspaper persists in publishing harmful material, that steps can be taken against them. We don't see that as necessarily a bad thing at all. So Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairperson, just to summarize, we first of all support the aims and objectives. We realize that the legislation may not be perfect. It may need tightening up here and there. We don't believe that by and large it is unconstitutional, and we don't believe that the committee should be put off by that threat. And we believe that those who demand exemption and demand special treatment must then also hold up their side of that agreement properly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much that you were putting some kind of a The one that is used by aeroplanes in the flight force is a very strong federal line. The committee, the sort of give us more courage, is giving the shuttle stadium. And we really want to thank you very much for that wonderful encouragement. The committee will never shy back. But let me give members of the committee an opportunity to ask questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also comment after the presenter to assure the presenter that as members of portfolio committee, we know our rules, we know our powers. Starting with consultation in terms of our rules and procedure does not mean when we present, we should agree wholeheartedly with all what we are saying. It's for us to decide whether what we are saying is correct according to our own assessment in terms of parliamentary procedure. Coming to the question of constitutionality or unconstitutionality, what is required by the court? The court requires that anything you are doing must have reason for your doing. If you want to correct something as a department or as a government, we also have the power. We can't abdicate our powers to everybody so that they can do pornography the way they are feeling. I just want to assure you, Chairperson. Thank you.
We'll come to the end of our public hearing this morning. The third leg, which is the second leg, is tomorrow. Now, what I want to propose to members is that we still have a few documents. And then thank you very much,
thank you
for your always maybe wonderful help us shape the country. Therefore, members, as you go back. I want to announce to members that Mr. Mark Rousseau has resigned in Parliament. During the election, Parliament has not yet appointed the committee plan. And he gave notice from Mr. Mark ago, and today Parliament has not appointed the committee plan. It does not have much capacity. Other things may not focus 100% if this was for the committee. I want to make a call as you go out of this meeting. Either you go to the second part of the parliament, but by the end of the meeting, you want to get one plan. That must be the first reference. It's a decision of the committee and does not need the money to give your money, tell the second part of the parliament to do the committee plan. No researcher, either researcher for them, researcher for them. On that note, I want to thank you very much, members and everybody. We convene tomorrow again, same day. Okay. actually changing it. Day 4 to revise. Day 4 to revise tomorrow morning. The 10th. Thank you very much, Ingos, and we'll be coming.
Thank you.